My exposure in public accounting gave me a window into what was going on within the companies. And what I saw was that a lot of companies were completely dysfunctional inside. And what that caused was that year after year, we had issues that we had to correct, and it didn't make sense. So what I set out to do was, I said, I'm going to help companies from the inside. That way they don't come back with the same problems every year to their public accountant, who has to then go and put patches. You know, if you want to make that $1 million salary and you're a firm mother and you're working for somebody else, it's going to be a little tough. But even within those parameters of working 9 to 2, 9 to 3, you still can make a very, very nice salary. You definitely have to be a numbers person. If you're scared of numbers, you'll go crazy because they'll be jumping out at you the whole day.
This is Career Forum. Hi, I'm Figi Barth, Director of Development for Sarah Schneer Institute. Choosing a career path can be so challenging. So many questions, so many things to think about. Who do you turn to for reliable information? Where do you go to hear about the experiences of others? Fortunately, you're in the right place, because here on Career Forum, we have answers. Get ready to hear from top professionals who will share their journeys with you and give you a candid inside look into the many aspects of their fields. This is knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Kaya Halberg is a CPA with Account Ed Finance and a college professor. She is an accountant who specializes in internal accounting systems, an area of accounting that Kaya had never envisioned she'd work in when she first started. So how'd she stumble upon this specialty? Let's see how this all adds up. Kaya, welcome to Career Forum.
Hi, good morning.
So for starters, can you give me a super brief overview of what you're doing currently?
So I call it accounting system design and consulting, where I come into a company, I assess what's going on the accounting end, internal accounting, obviously, and I help them restructure, or if they're starting up, I help them structure correctly so that their bookkeeper or whoever's managing their accounting can put things in correctly.
Okay, so I'm definitely going to want to hear more about this later. But first, what I like to do is go back before we move forward. So let's get some background. Where were you born and raised?
Born somewhere in New Jersey or New York. I was raised in Lakewood. So I guess that's where I identify with as my hometown. And never left. I mean, I moved to Jackson, but that's just a couple steps away.
I think that's really Lakewood, right?
Pretty much.
So when you were in this stage of life where you were kind of making the decision about what to go for, did you already have exposure to any accountants or to the field of accounting? Was there anyone from your circle of friends that was going for it?
So I actually never intended going into accounting.
Interesting.
Originally, I was planning on going to the medical field. And a friend of mine called me and she tried to convince me to join her in college. And she said, I'm taking accounting. It's an easy, simple career. She has easy schooling. Let's just do it together. And I was always good at math. And I said, you know what? I guess I'll join you. At that point, I didn't have anyone to take me through with the medical field. And there were other challenges as well with that. And I ended up going along with her. She dropped out and left me behind. And I graduated.
Wow. So when you were thinking about doing this, I'm assuming that you obviously had kind of like some sort of raw material that made you feel like you were a good candidate for this, meaning you don't just jump into accounting without feeling like you have what it takes. So were you a math person? Were you a numbers person when you were a kid?
So yeah, I was always a math person. I was always good with numbers. In fact, I have a friend who signed my autograph book in 8th grade. And the joke was that I used to move through things pretty quickly. And she wrote, the Twin Towers will sit down when I get everything either right or all wrong, which basically meant that I usually will get this stuff right. Mm-hmm. But because I was careless and I moved through things all too quickly, I was going to get things wrong. I definitely became more careful with time. And I've learned to build controls in to help with that. But I always was a numbers person and it always was something that I could relate to. Even when I was considering the medical field is a very science heavy and math heavy field as well. In order to get into medical school, you have to know physics as well. You have to know calculus. All that is, you know, going back to the numbers, you can't really get through without numbers. Accounting, I guess, is just a cleaner version.
That's interesting. So where did you actually go for this degree? Could you tell me more about the schooling process?
So I started out with a junior accounting course where I took the principles of accounting and basics about tax. And then I ended up going and bridging that to a bachelor's, which wasn't necessarily focused on accounting, but it was enough to get the prerequisites for a master's degree. Once I had the prerequisites, I went on to do the master's degree through Fairleigh Dickinson University, which was PCS's program for women. We were the first cohort in Lakewood for women.
So do you think that somebody who's looking to go into the field of accounting needs to get a master's? Is that par for the course?
No, not at all. Because unless you're going to work for a big corporate company that focuses on degrees, the main thing is getting a CPA. Getting the CPA license, which you become a certified public accountant, is what differentiates you from everybody else. And it shows that you actually had the skills and you had the wherewithal to go through the process, put in the effort, and succeed. Getting the degree means sitting through school, sitting through classes. And yes, you have to obviously perform and you have to be able to pass them. But that CPA license is what differentiates you. And it shows whoever it is that you can actually do it. So in terms of getting a bachelor's versus a master's, in the extended bachelor's programs that are available today, you're basically getting the same education as I got when getting a master's. In fact, with Sarah Schneer, the way I structure the program was that they should get the education at the top level possible for what we're giving them. And they can get the full background of everything they need to know in order to sit for the CPA exams and in order to succeed in the field at the bachelor's level, which is not about a lower quality of education. It's just about getting the degree in a way that doesn't require two steps.
Can you tell me a little bit more about this process?
So becoming a CPA requires a couple of different things. You have the education requirement where you have to complete a certain amount of education. It's 150 credits and you have to have a certain number in the accounting field with specifics about different courses that need to be covered. So that's the education requirement. Now you can either complete it by doing 120 credits as a bachelor's and then 30 credits as a master's, or you can do it as an extended bachelor's program where you're just completing it all of it at the undergrad level, which just is a really technical thing. Then after the education comes the experience and the testing, which you can do either one, either order, it doesn't make a difference. But experience is that each state has their own requirements of how much of experience you need. You might need a year, you might need 2 years under a certified public accountant who will sign off on your hours, and you need to be able to get exposure to different parts of the accounting field. So that's the experience requirement. The testing is 4 different exams. Each exam is a grueling exam, and they basically test you to see if you're able to apply the principles. Though, to be honest, it doesn't necessarily translate into the real world, but it still weeds out those who can't really make it through in terms of their skills and in terms of what they've absorbed.
So from what I've heard about the CPA exam, it sounds like it's a pretty brutal process. I would love to know how you made it work. How many hours did you need to study? How did you set yourself up for success? Can you tell me more about that?
It's quite grueling, and it's known to be one of the hardest exams to pass. I crammed it all into 6 months because I said, if I'm going to kill myself, I may as well kill myself in a shorter time. Instead of extending the agony and just prolonging it and going through it for however long it was. I also was determined to pass in the first try because I said, I'm not doing this again. I'm doing it once and that's it. And Baruch Hashem worked out. I was studying about 6 to 7 hours a night for those 6 months. I probably took 2 or 3 days break in between each exam. So that's 3 breaks, but that was the extent of it. I just plugged away night after night and kept going until I got to the end.
And did you know right away if you passed each one?
No. And that was the hardest part. So the way it worked was back in the days when I took it, you had 2 months that you were able to take the test and the third month was a blackout month. For every quarter, they had 2 months that were testing months and then the third one was a blackout month. The timing for the release of scores was based on when you took it, but it went in increments. So if you took it towards the beginning of that window, you had to wait a longer time. And by the time I got my results for the 4th exam, I was already on vacation because I decided I was finished anyways. I was like, whatever happened, happened. And I just hoped that I got it. And it was very relieving when I found out and I logged on and I got my scores. You wait till, you know, 12 a.m. of the day that they release the scores and finally you get the scores. But with the other exams, I just went straight on to the next one. For each one, you know, after I did the first one, I took my 1 or 2 days break, and even though I didn't have my score yet, I went on to the next one because I just had to keep moving.
So you don't need to pass one in order to take the next?
No. So the way it works is you have an 18-month window within which you have to pass all of them. You have to make sure that within those 18 months, you got through each one and passed it. And my days was more complicated because the blackout month for each quarter caused problems with scheduling and just logistically, you couldn't necessarily fit it in. You had to make sure that if you failed one, it didn't extend your period too long, that you lost something you took beforehand. So they always say, take the hardest one first. That way, if you do fail, at least your window starts again. Because if you fail the last one, then you're really in trouble.
Moving back to you and your story. So now that you have this, you got your prereqs, then you went on for this master's, you were able to sit for your CPA, and you, Baruch Hashem, were able to pass them all. So what was your first job out of school?
I had a little bit of background in business. I worked in an office doing bookkeeping, but that was part-time. And my first actual job working in an accounting firm was brutal for me because I actually was working as a teacher beforehand. And teaching is dynamic. You're moving around. You're speaking to people. You're engaging. It's very different. All of a sudden, I was sitting in a desk from 9 to 5. I was going out of my mind. And even though I'm good with numbers and all that, still, sitting in front of a computer all day when you're not used to it can literally drive you to drink. So it was very hard. I actually found all kinds of side things to keep me busy. I built a website. I started a business. Really, it was just for the kicks of it. It ended up that the concept didn't work out, but at least it distracted me somewhat. That got me through that first year.
Did you ever like pick that up again, that business type of thing?
No. So, but it did give me, the interesting part is it gave me a great background in programming. I basically learned to program the website by myself. Essentially, I was the one picking apart the code and doing things like that, which today is a tremendous asset because when I'm structuring things for companies and I'm setting up a system for them, I'm able to understand programming language. And if I have to look at something and understand what the flow logic is, it works. It also works in terms of Excel, understanding how to build a formula. When you go through the programming and you understand the logical progression of how you get from point A to point B, how you figure out a solution, it helps a tremendous amount with playing around with things in Excel. So I can build Excel formulas and worksheets that get what my clients need because I learned those skills back then. So I guess it's different than what I originally intended it for, but it definitely is useful.
So you were in this 9 to 5 job and you weren't really enjoying it so much, it sounds like.
So I wasn't really enjoying it in the beginning because it was really, really difficult for me to sit straight for that long. After a few months, I realized how much I was learning. It didn't hit me until later to realize that I got the whole basis of what I do today from those months that I was working there, from those months that I was sitting there. And it was really difficult for me to sit straight. I really gained a tremendous amount because I got exposed to the whole accounting field. It was a small firm and I did a lot because there weren't that many people and we all just shifted around and did whatever had to be done. So I got exposure to a lot of different things that built what I do today.
So I would love to get into the nitty gritties. Can you tell me more about that first job? What area of accounting it was in and what did your day-to-day look like?
So it was a public accounting firm. And in terms of public versus private accounting, there are two different main divisions of accounting. Public accounting is where you have an accountant who deals with many different people's taxes, many different people's financials, and they provide an external service by being a provider that comes into the company and helps them assist with whatever they're doing in terms of tax returns or providing financials to banks, etc. So the tasks that could be done are obviously preparing tax returns, doing financial audits, which can have many different uses, whether it's for government funding, whether it's for presenting financials to a bank for loans. There are many different uses for those, and we did that as well. So basically, we were going through that process. There wasn't much of the bookkeeping or advisory that I'm involved with today, but what we did was we were going through people's things and making sure that the numbers added up and then filing their returns. Now, on the private accounting end, if you were to look at private accounting is where a company has somebody hired internally to make sure that their processes are going smoothly, to review things inside, to make sure that if anything goes wrong financially, someone catches it. Somebody who's in tune with the company's processes to make sure that the numbers that they're giving are accurate. So it's a very different perspective. It has completely different pressures, different deadlines. In internal accounting or private accounting, the deadlines are more at the end of the month. You want to make sure that your financials are complete and accurate. Whereas in public accounting, there are accounting deadlines. For example, the one coming up next week, which is March 15th, there's April 15th, there's October 15th, there's September 15th. There's all different 15ths of the month where there are federal filing deadlines, which usually come along with state deadlines, and you're required to submit outside reports, namely tax returns that have to be given in. So the deadlines in terms of private versus public, public is usually a lot more pressured because it can't be stretched. If you don't submit your extension, if you don't submit your tax return, you get penalties. Whereas internal accounting, you should close the month on time. But if you don't, generally, it's not going to have any penalties attached. So in terms of the life of a public accountant versus private accountant, it definitely makes a difference.
So at the point that you were working in public accounting, what was your stage of life at that point?
So I had, my son was, I think he was about 3.5. That was what pushed me into private, where he had a couple of emergencies. He was pushed down a slide and he hit 3 teeth and he had a massive issue in his mouth and I had to keep on leaving. And my boss was not so happy that I had to keep on taking care of it. And I said, you know what? I'm a mother first and I need to be there for my child. And in public accounting, there isn't necessarily flexibility in that way, because if there are deadlines, there are deadlines and the IRS doesn't really care. So for me, that pressure was a little bit too much because I needed to be able to be there for my family first. And that's where I moved over into private accounting, where when you're dealing with internal things, there are definitely deadlines and there definitely are complications. And you have to also work hand in hand with the external accountants, but it's not the same thing that you're dealing with the IRS and that kind of pressure.
That makes perfect sense. Life as a firm woman and mother is very busy. So you made that shift, it sounds like, because you really needed to at that stage. But I guess for different people, you know, public accounting could work in other ways. So I would love to hear more about now your shift to private accounting. What was your next job?
The way it flowed was my exposure in public accounting gave me a window into what was going on within the companies. And what I saw was that a lot of companies were completely dysfunctional inside. And what that meant was they had people who were doing their bookkeeping or had people doing their internal accounting who weren't necessarily trained properly. And a lot of these people created their own programs, created their own way of doing things that didn't necessarily line up with the way it should be. And what that caused was that year after year, we had issues that we had to correct. And I call it putting Band-Aids, where we would come in and put a patch at the end of the year just to make it all look pretty. But at the end of the day, the stuff inside was completely rotten. And it didn't make sense. So what I set out to do was I said, I'm going to help companies from the inside. That way they don't come back with the same problems every year to their public accountant who has to then go and put patches. Rather, teach them and train them and create systems that work so that at the end of the year, they're confident and they know what to do. This is not about me going in and doing bookkeeping for them. It was about me training them and giving them the tools to understand what they needed to do and do it properly.
So just to clarify, when you were in this internal accounting setting, you saw that a lot of the issues were stemming with the bookkeepers. Is that what I'm hearing?
So a lot of it was coming from the bookkeeping. Now, bookkeeping is one of the steps of accounting. It's the base level. And it can go as far up as a CFO, because as a CFO wasn't exposed enough to how practices should be, they wouldn't necessarily set up the bookkeeping, which is the bottom level, at the right way. So what I would do is I would come in and help them understand, make sure the bookkeepers are well-versed in the basics of accounting. And from there, they're able to set up practices that make sense and work for them in their industry.
So what was it about the bookkeepers that caused them to have these recurring problems?
So bookkeeping is largely an unregulated field, which basically means that people can say, I'm a bookkeeper without having any official degree or certification. Accounting is made up of a bunch of different levels. You have the bookkeepers, and then you have the accountants, and then you have the CFOs. And if the bookkeepers aren't trained properly, then none of the information flowing through to the higher levels is going to be accurate. So what I actually do is I have created an accounting course, a stripped down accounting course for the bookkeepers to give them a basic understanding of how accounting works. And once they have that understanding, they're able to do things correctly. And the information they're passing on to the next level is going to be much more accurate and within the accounting framework, as opposed to something that's really unregulated and self-directed.
So can you get a little more specific? I would love to hear a story of a time where you saw that there was an internal issue that needed to be corrected. And through this process of training them or teaching them the ropes, you were able to see a big difference.
So I had a company that I came into, a large company with millions of dollars of revenue. They were working off of a combination of Excel sheets and a bookkeeping system that was completely inadequate. Now, for anybody who understands bookkeeping, who understands accounts receivable, accounts payable, accounts receivable is when somebody owes you money for something that you provided to them, whether it was goods or services. Now, in this company, it's a service-based business. They were sending out invoices and the bookkeeper was receiving payments. And instead of receiving the payment and marking the invoice as paid, she was deleting the original invoices, which meant we had no record of who was billed, when they were billed, when the time period that they were being billed for. And it was a mess because even though technically every time she received a payment, she deleted the invoice, it meant we had no idea how much they were really making month to month. And I took their information. I actually worked backwards using something called an audit trail, where I looked back into the system. QuickBooks has a back end where you can see what was done to every single transaction. And we tried to rebuild and get an idea of how much they were making month to month, because until then they really didn't know. They really didn't know how much in services they were providing on a monthly basis. They only knew how much hit the bank account. So in that kind of situation, the bookkeeper, as far as she was concerned, she was reconciling bank accounts and everything was perfect. But when we look at it from the accounting perspective, called the accrual basis, there was nothing there. And the accrual basis is where you're looking at your business to see how much you're making from your services that you provide, as opposed to how much cash you collected. Meaning, am I making money by doing what I'm doing? Yes, maybe I should get a better collection person, but is my actual service generating revenue? It was a question they didn't have an answer to because they didn't have the knowledge, they didn't have the information. And again, it was just because it was set up the wrong way. And we restructured that and it gave them a much better idea. They also were able to improve their collections because they knew how old things were. They saw patterns with certain vendors, certain clients, and they were able to change things.
So you're really training the company on how to navigate these financial processes.
Correct. And we actually had to set up everything from scratch because the way it was done before was completely inadequate for what we were trying to accomplish.
How does that lead you to what you're currently doing? Meaning, is that what you're doing now? And how did you get there? Because from what I understand, you kind of are working now for yourself. So how did that happen?
So this is a client that I had recently. It's actually a client that I still service. What happened originally was, back when I was in public accounting, I would take a look at the client's books, because the first thing before you file any tax return is you have to go through it and see if it makes any sense. You can't just file things based on whatever reports they print for you. And like I said, we would find very often discrepancies, different things that didn't match up and didn't make sense. And we used to try and give pointers to the bookkeepers and say, next time do this. When you have a mortgage, make sure that all the payments go into one account. That way you're having one mortgage liability that's being dealt with as opposed to five. We used to tell them, be consistent. Even if you're consistently wrong, at least we know where to look. That's where I came from. And I just started doing that, focusing entirely on making sure that their processes were proper from the start. And I do that for many different clients. I'm brought in as an external consultant. I come in, I analyze what's going on, and I teach them. So this client that I'm talking about, that we restructured their whole way of dealing with receivables, was a client that I took on in the recent past.
So I'm very intrigued by your company's title, Account Ed Finance. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, it's a sore point. I would say marketing is not my strong point in any way or form. And for me, the line that I have underneath it is really more what represents me. It's accuracy through education.
So it's a play on words, right? I thought it was so cute. Like accounted, everything's accounted for, and then account ed, like education.
Exactly. So it's account education in finance.
I don't know why it's a sore point.
Because people trip over it. It's hard to pronounce. It's hard to spell. It's long. And I keep on getting flack from so many people. You got to fix your marketing. But you know what? Nobody comes to me because of my marketing. So it's something that I probably should deal with at some point, but I guess my focus is more on what I actually provide rather than what my company looks like.
I was just going to say, I feel like, you know, you can't be good at everything, and the world needs people who are good accountants, and the world needs people who are good marketers. So it sounds to me, you know, and especially with your catch title, that you're kind of able to combine this love of teaching, which you mentioned earlier, with this accuracy piece, with this accounting piece. So would you say that's what your mission is? Like teaching people how to correct things so they can do it properly themselves?
Correct. So my goal is to empower people to understand things and be able to do them properly. We always say the accounting personality is a very, it's probably more quiet and not very outgoing personality. I wouldn't consider myself a typical accountant. The joke about accountants is that the outgoing accountant looks at somebody else's shoes, meaning he hasn't even made it up to eye level. No eye contact.
I never heard that
now,
one.
Now, I hope all those accountants out there forgive me. It's not about, you know, putting them down. It's just that very often the people who are focused on the numbers and need numbers to line up, they're not interested in people. They're not interested in discussing things with people. They're not interested in training people. And that's why, in a certain way, my combination is unique, because I combine that teaching field, which is very interactive, very social, and dealing with people all the time, with the accounting and getting into the nitty-gritties of the numbers. So in that way, I'm different. And I call myself a crazy accountant sometimes, or whatever it is, but that's really where things are a little different than typical.
So you're telling me that accountants don't need to be straight-laced and boring. They can have some personality also.
Yeah, sometimes. A handful.
So you mentioned earlier, and I want to just circle back to it, you mentioned that, you know, you're involved in structuring Sara Schneer's program. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that piece of what you do.
So I started working with Sara Schneer a couple of years back. And when I came in, it was a newish program. And they were busy structuring it with each different college they worked with. And they had to figure out how to present the courses. And very often the courses were presented to the professor as, here, this is your topic, go ahead and teach it. And I started discussing with Bossy Flamenhoft, who is in charge of the program. I said, is there someone coordinating this to make sure that they're accomplishing what they need to? Because coming from where I was when I graduated, I have to say I wasn't necessarily prepared for the workforce. I wasn't prepared for the real accounting world. I could barely read financials on my own. Now, it sounds funny because I passed the CPA exams very well. Baruch Hashem did very well on them, and I supposedly knew my stuff. I knew a lot of topics, but when it came down to practical, I really was lacking a lot of skills. So in terms of education, when I came into Sara Schneer and I was teaching for them, I said the main thing that I want to see my students graduate with is, A, the ability to sit for the CPA exam, which is a technical thing. They have to have accomplished a certain amount, learned certain topics, and B, to be able to walk into the working world and understand something if somebody gives it to them. If you sit down and your employer asks you, how does a profit and loss tie into a balance sheet? These are two different reports in accounting. If you don't know the answer, then you're really missing something. Sometimes students don't pick these things up, and to me, that was critical. So my perspective when I started helping Bossy was, I said, I want to make sure that our students graduate with the skills that they need for the workforce and to take the exams. So that's our focus. And whenever I speak to professors, I sit down with them and I go through the curriculum with them to help them understand what's a focus, what's an important skill that they need to graduate this course with. And it really is a mindset of, we want our students to be graduating with the ability to succeed in both the CPA exam and the workforce. And that we really have had a lot of good feedback on that.
And have you also taught for them?
I teach for Sara Schneer as well. I love teaching the beginning levels because I always say I want to make sure my students get the basics straight. And when I know that they graduated my course with the basics down pat, then I know that they're ready to progress onto the next one.
So I would love now to move into more just general information about the field of accounting to help all those who are interested and just want to hear more. So I would love to know, for starters, can you tell me about salaries? You know, you mentioned different areas of accounting. There is public and private. So can you go a little bit into each one and tell me about the starting salary for each area?
So starting salary is a hard number at this point because everything's fluctuating a lot at this, you know, in this market. I would say about a year ago, things were very, very high and people were paying a lot to bring somebody in. Today, I think it's stabilized a little bit because the economy is slowly decompressing. The fizz is being let out and people are becoming more realistic as the interest rates have gone up. The real estate market has been hit and things are settling a little bit. So it's hard for me to pin it on a number. I generally say that the amount that you're going to get as a starting salary isn't necessarily higher than somebody who's been working in an office because your value builds with experience. And that's really what it is throughout the entire accounting journey. As you get more experience, you become faster and better and more attuned to what you need to know, and you become more valuable. And this really flows through when people ask me, you know, how much can I get if I want to work 9 to 2? So I tell them, if you're working 9 to 2, it's not a commitment like working 9 to 5. Then there's beyond 9 to 5. And when it comes to salaries, it's really about what are you providing to your employer? If you're providing a tremendous value because you're taking on the responsibility, then you get paid commensurate with your responsibility. That's how it works. So it's about what value are you providing, what responsibility are you taking on, and that's really what your compensation is going to bring.
So can you give me like a rough number or even a range?
I would say, so again, it's within the beginning starting range of any office job, which is $60,000, $70,000 range for beginners, but it can go well into the six digits once you get to that point where you're providing value with your experience.
How does that work with somebody who's looking to fit this into a firm lifestyle and see if it could work with also raising a family?
You know, the honest truth is, you know, if you want to make that $1 million salary and you're a firm mother and you're working for somebody else, it's going to be a little tough. But even within those parameters of working 9 to 2, 9 to 3, you still can make a very, very nice salary. It's not going to be the same as somebody who's working longer. You know, there's no cutting corners. It's not going to add up otherwise. Now, there's some people who work 9 to 2 or 9 to 3 and then they fill in at night. There's some people who have a responsibility to respond in case of emergency. And all of those things will add tremendously to the salary because, again, it's about what value you're providing to your employer. It's not about, you know, how much money can I make every hour that I'm there. It's about the overall picture. So there are a lot of firm women who are in the accounting field, and the reason why they're able to make it is because they have experience and they're providing a tremendous amount of value to their employer by being available, by doing whatever they're doing in a way that's not just about clocking hours.
And it sounds like this value comes over time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, honestly, like anything else, the more you do it, the more you know, the more experience you have, the more valuable you are.
And what about remote options? Does such a thing exist in this field?
There are a lot of remote options because, like I said, the accountant personality is not necessarily social either way. So what you're doing is usually more about making sure that the systems are working properly. You're not doing data entry. Data entry is for the bookkeepers. It's for the lower level. At the accounting level, generally, it's about review. It's about strategizing. And in today's world with Zoom, with all of the remote access, almost anything's possible. So there are a lot of remote options because after COVID, everybody learned that you can do it from far.
And what about skills that are needed for this field? So you mentioned in the beginning that you yourself are a numbers person. Would you say that it is essential to be a math person in order to be successful in accounting?
You definitely have to be a numbers person. If you're scared of numbers, you'll go crazy because they'll be jumping out at you the whole day. You have to be comfortable with numbers. You have to be comfortable with technology because in today's day and age, you're not working with the green papers anymore. You're actually working with computers, with Excel, with programs. So those things are definitely critical. I would say it's important to be able to communicate. You don't have to be a social butterfly, but you have to be able to communicate what you're trying to do because whether you're communicating to your boss, whether you're communicating with a bank, whether you're communicating with a government authority, you need to be able to say what you need to say. Very often you have to write letters and explain what you're trying to do. Detail-oriented is extremely important. You have to be able to focus in on the details of what's going on because the whole concept of financial analysis is about working with details and understanding what they mean and working hard and making sure you can get to the bottom of a problem. Somebody who doesn't have the determination and just likes to look at things on the surface level and move on is not going to be able to get to the bottom of why something is a certain way.
And going back to the beginning where you were discussing your process of how you passed your CPAs and how you were studying 6-7 hours a day for, you know, months straight, it sounds like that resilience is also an important piece in the field, but specifically in the process to get to becoming an accountant.
For sure. And it's not just in the process of getting to become an accountant. You know, your stage in life also has to be able to accommodate that. When I had, my son was a baby, he was impossible. He did not sleep through the night and I couldn't focus. I couldn't study and I couldn't do it. And it took me actually being able to sit down and do those 6 to 7 hours a night until I had that time. I couldn't actually accomplish it. In terms of the field though, you have to have that stick-to-itiveness where you're going to sit down and actually get to the bottom of a problem, because very often you have no idea what's coming. Where I deal with forensic cases where there are lawsuits and they need somebody to figure out what's going on behind the scenes. And very often it requires going through many, 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 many pages of documentation, spreadsheets, reports, until you finally figure out what's behind something. It can take a lot of time. And you need to be able to push through in order to get to those answers.
So overall, would you say that accounting is a good career path for a woman?
It definitely can be. You have to be the right fit, though. I guess like everything else.
So it sounds like for you, your accounting degree opened up a lot of different doors of opportunity. I'm curious, do you have any future aspirations, dreams, anything different you would want to try one day?
Maybe I'll go to medical school one day, but I don't know if it's realistic. That's not necessarily a career for a woman, from what I understand. What I found interesting was the fact that my degree enabled me to do something that was way out of the box, and it enabled me to do something that fit into my personality, which is something that really anyone can do. Anyone can find, if they have the basic qualities, they can really find their niche if they look enough. It's really about figuring out who you are. And people ask me all the time, should I go into accounting? Should I not? And my question is, are you determined enough to get through school? Are you going to put in the effort and do what you need to do and work until you figure out what works for you? And that's really the answer I would give to anyone, honestly, in any field. But with accounting specifically, people have this notion that it's an easy degree and it's easy come. It's not easy come, not at all. It's something that you have to invest effort in, and the effort that you invest, you'll be able to reap rewards from. It's about, am I detail oriented enough? And am I going to be goal oriented to get to the end of it? And then once you do that, you'll figure something out that works for you.
So Chaya, if anyone listening has any other follow-up questions for you, is there a way that they can get in touch with you?
Definitely. Email's good, though right now my emails are swamped. Don't try to reach any accountant anytime between February and April. Until April passes, it's a nightmare. We're all chasing our tails. And in my situation, I'm dealing with a lot of companies. I have to get them to the point where they're ready to file their taxes. And I have to make sure that their systems are correct and their processes are complete. So my email is right now a little bit overflowing. But in general, if you're trying to reach any accountants, you're better off going like from May till, I guess, about July. Already in August, it heats up because you have the deadlines in September and October. And then there's a little bit of a lull, I would say, like after October. By the time December hits, it's already crazy. So if you want to reach me, try one of those lighter months. If not, you can definitely try, and I will try to get back to you as soon as possible.
Not to scare anyone off about all these deadlines, Chaya.
Listen, some people thrive on pressure. You know, the day of my son's bris was January 31st, and I didn't have a choice, but I had to help certain clients get their 1099s out because that was a deadline. So while the rest of my family went to sleep because the baby had stayed up a whole night screaming, I had to sit there by my computer. It happens. So my name is Chaya, and my email is chaya@accountedfinance.com. Now, as we discussed the name of my company, Account Ed Finance, which is accountedfinance.com. Do you realize why I need marketing?
Thank you, Chaya. Chaya Halberg is a CPA with Account Ed Finance and a professor at the College of Mount St. Vincent and Keene University. Chaya, thanks so much for talking to me today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us on Career Forum. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends so that we can continue to provide quality information that helps you make informed decisions about your future. To explore possible career options, to speak to a career advisor, or to learn more about Sarah Schneer, please visit our website at www.sarasch.com or call us at 718-633-8557, extension 37, and discover how we can help you achieve your career goals.